It's Purse here, recording on her phone for reasons. And today's, I was about to say it's Monday's episode, but honestly, I don't know when I'm going to upload this. But today, we're going to be talking about relationships. And I have one episode that I'm thinking of doing about past relationships slash past relationship. But this isn't that. This is about me, myself, and where I see where I'm going in the future when it comes to more intimate relationships with people, not necessarily friendships or business relationships, because I've learned how to navigate those. But just intimate relationships, I suppose. And then I might get into things about like sexuality. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see as we go. But I think a good starting point is just I'm in a second form of therapy now. Or not a second form. Anyone who's listened to me for a little while or who has listened to the right episodes, even if they haven't been listening to me for a while, knows that I've gone through, I call them rounds, but it's really just multiple therapists at multiple periods of my time of my life, depending on what I was going through. And my first session of therapy was fruitless, wasn't fruitful, I suppose. And my second round was really good, but it was paid for by insurance, and insurance has a limit, and I need to wait for it to renew before I can go back to the same person. So now I'm actually looking into seeking psychiatric services within my university, which is free because I pay for healthcare in the tens of thousands of dollars that I pay towards my tuition and room and board and everything else. Which is nice because I have a backup option for something that seemed very hopeless. It's unfortunate because mental health care isn't guaranteed as it is with physical health care. Just a little side point. It's unfortunate because sometimes you end up having to switch people. You know, you might find a great person in private practice that you really connect with, but you either need to pay for that out of pocket or with insurance, and that's not sustainable. So then you might need to go to, a health center, which isn't sustainable because if it's a free service, a voluntary service, or something that's like a subset of government money kind of gets funneled to them or dripped down like a faucet that isn't exactly turned off, so it's just literally dripping funds. You tend not to get to see the same person all the time, or even if you do, it's usually a short period of time because they have so many people in need that they need to get to, so it's not long term. Universities and like higher education institutions are really, really nice because when you get to like secondary school or like public school system, the guidance counselors and social workers there tend not to be educated enough to help with like really intense psychiatric problems. If you have things where you need medication, or if you have things that are just really intense, really present, you really need those resources. Publicly funded, like schools, their counselors tend not to be good enough. So universities are a great opportunity, actually, because a lot of the times, the people you're seeing are doctors. They went to your university or another university. They're accredited. They're coming here because, they're doing extra research, but instead of a professor, they're providing medical services and doing research or whatnot, So it's a good place to be in to receive services that you may not have been able to receive at any other time or period in your life because of either financial reasons or because, the resources that were available to you weren't exactly what you needed. University is also additionally a good place. This is like turning into a resource plug, but a good place to seek out help as well, especially if you were younger and you had seen therapists. But it didn't seem to help, especially if you had seen publicly funded therapists, and then once you turned 18 slash graduated, you didn't have enough money to go into private practice, or even if you hadn't seen anyone, because of your parents or your guardians would not let you. University is great because you're paying for the tuition, you're paying into healthcare, but also, and this is mostly for students who are 18 and above when they start, or like really close to 18, but generally 18 and above. A lot of things that people get diagnosed, there's a lot of diagnoses that come out when you're really young, and they're really present when you're young, or they're even something that people get when they're young and they tend to grow out of, which is why people say sometimes that they're overdiagnosed, because, you know, people grow out of them. And a couple of things that I'm thinking of are certain behavioral temperament issues, especially when it comes to tantrums and, you know, social problems, because as a child, as an adolescent, you're learning how to navigate your world. And additionally, ADHD, ADD, attention deficit, anything tends to be diagnosed a lot in youngins, which is fine. It is what it is. But conversely, there are certain diagnoses that literally professionals cannot, through the DSM-5 or whatever they're training, like certain diagnoses, the criteria is that you need to be above 18. Because whereas there's certain things like attention deficit things where, you know, you might just be a hyperactive kid, or social issues where these issues might manifest themselves because you just aren't sure of who you are in the world yet, and you're awkward, and you're not sure who you want to be or who you are. There are other diagnoses that can't be attached to a person under 18 because of the way that adolescence and hormonal changes and stuff happens. A lot of the symptoms of certain diagnoses present themselves in a widespread of young adults, just because, you know, they're moody, they're up and down because of their emotions, they're trying to figure out who they are, they're trying to fit in. So there's a lot of like adverse, you know, weird social behaviors that teens partake in and adolescents partake in, not necessarily because they have any sort of issue or it's a symptom of an issue, but just because they are learning how to be functioning human. Well, but it's we, because I'm 18 at the time of this being posted. But you know, we are learning how to be ourselves in the world. And you would think that would extend to like even university years, because people are still trying to figure out who they are. But there needs to be an age cap for everything, and 18 is the age cap for that. So that's my little plug for university services, especially even if you feel like you weren't diagnosed correctly in the past, or, you know, you never had an opportunity to be diagnosed correctly. University resources are great for many reasons, and one of them is that once you're over 18, it opens the door for a lot of diagnoses that might not have been previously considered, because your previous medical healthcare practitioners might have thought, you know, this could be an issue, but it also could be just you growing up and, you know, the way that you as a person are trying to analyze and like find your place in the world. And a lot of medical like health professionals don't want to attach a label to people when they don't have to, because labels can be very stigmatizing, they can be very othering. I personally enjoy labels because I like to categorize things. I like to have everything, you know, in a neat little box. I compartmentalize my feelings, I compartmentalize a lot of my values. So I enjoy labels, but there are a lot of people who don't enjoy labels because they feel as though they're being put in a box. They feel like they are being categorized and they're being compartmentalized, and that at the end of the day, all these labels are going to amount to a bunch of preconceptions that other people are going to have about them, but none of the labels really have anything necessarily to do with who they are as a person. For example, you can have bipolar disorder and be a terrible murderous human being, but that's probably just because you're a terrible murderous human being. It has nothing to do with your bipolar disorder. Whereas you can also have bipolar disorder and be an awesome humanitarian who works at soup kitchens and like reads to underprivileged children. But someone who's uneducated about mental health might think that everyone with bipolar disorder is a murderous human being. So, you know, now it's that one label that is kind of speaking for you when you're much more than that. And I completely understand that experience. I personally have had positive receptions to me talking about the things that I'm dealing with and the things that I'm being tested for and the things that I'm being diagnosed for, but you know, whatnot. Anyways, that's my resource plug. I like to plug resources. I like to ramble. I hope that even though that wasn't on topic, it's helpful to someone who is thinking, you know, where can I get help and why are no diagnoses fitting me? Because that happened to me. That happened to me in the past where, you know, I went and I went to therapy and I was told to look up, you know, generalized anxiety and major depressive disorder / clinical depression. And in my opinion, I said, well, if this is it, then I should be able to just work through this through sheer willpower. And that was wrong. I learned the hard way that that's not how it works. And then I went back to therapy and I was over 18 and I was a little more open, and we got around to BPD, which I'm going to be further tested for, whatnot. And that really stuck with me, but I don't think it was something that, even if I was aware of it at the time I went to my first counselor, I don't even think that would be something she would have considered, because I was not 18 at the time. Now, with that being said, how did I get into this? I was talking about relationships. I was talking about how I'm, so I got an intake appointment with my new university. It's really nice. I'm going to see, a new counselor, but, I'm going to see a psychiatrist, and then I should be getting into some DBT therapy groups. I'm being recommended by a resident or by a psychologist for, a DBT group, which I might be approved for, which would be nice. And then I've been recommended, upon, not inspection, but upon like an assessment of the notes that were made about me during my appointment, whether I should, see a psychiatrist or not, to talk about medication, being officially diagnosed. 'Cause, as of late, it's been mostly just me explaining my symptoms and then various medical professionals who don't exclusively diagnose, saying, you know, like, I don't diagnose, I don't, but like, yeah, I can see where you're coming from, you know. So getting like an on paper, as of now, you meet 5+ of the DSM-5 symptoms for this, and this, which I'm really excited for, because again, I need labels. So I'm actually just going to jot down what I've talked about, real quick, so that I know what to title this. And real quick too, medications. This is a housekeeping note that I'm just going to throw in the middle of here. I've talked about this before, more so on my Anchor station and not so much, in podcast, formally, but, I think one of the new formats that I'm going to format my episodes is that I'm just going to talk. And a lot of things might come out. So as of now, we've touched resources. We're going to go into medications. Then we're going to go into relationships. So a podcast might not be one huge subject anymore. It might just be multiple smaller subjects. Because honestly, I've gone through a lot of the big subjects that mean a lot to me. And everything means a lot to me, obviously. But a bunch of big subjects that I could talk on and on about. And now I'm getting into a lot of subjects that I've jotted down that I still have opinions on, but not 40 minutes worth of opinions on. So I'll probably take, you know, 3 mini subjects that are about 10-15 minutes a piece, and just string them together and make one episode with like 3 different topics, instead of 3 different episodes with 1 different topic that's only going to last like 15 minutes. So that's a quick housekeeping, something to keep in mind. But it depends. Some episodes I'll be jumping around, some episodes I won't. The titles should give you an indicator about how, how many topics are going to be covered and which topics will be covered, but sometimes they won't because there's also a character limit. And that's just fair warning. Anyway, going into it. So, we talked about resources. Now we're going to medications, 'cause I'm talking about how I might see a psychiatrist, to assess whether medications are a good route to go down, B, for diagnosis, C, to also figure out what the future steps are, because right now just the proposed future steps are DBT therapy and a psychiatric consult. So the psychiatric consult could open doors for more things, or it could close doors and they could say, you know what, you're fine. I highly doubt that's what they're going to say, but I'm not sure if they're gonna, you know, pull out all the stops for me in terms of a recovery team. And one thing I want to touch as well is that I am personally anti-medication for myself. I'm not anti-medication in general. I think I have friends who are on medication, and it really helps them. It really levels them out, and I'm happy for them. But I don't plan on and have no interest in starting medication anytime soon. And here's a couple reasons why. if this was 3 years ago, I would probably, and I knew then what I know now, I'd probably be more open to medication because high school is structured a lot differently than university. A, it's I'm not paying thousands of dollars to go to class. And B, at the end of the day, like honestly, some more people are being passed from classes, like passed out of classes and pushed up to different the next grade than they should be. But in high school, your teachers want to pass you. They want to funnel you through the system. They want to be successful. They can be fired, if too many students in their class fail. Parents have a lot of leeway. It's kind of turning into that. Not kind of. It's slow going, but universities are starting to see some of that too, where parental complaints do have some sort of weight, even though it's not as much as high school. So really, I would be okay with meds in high school because I feel like I would have a lot of safety area to play with if the medication doesn't work. If I take medication and I'm taking it for a couple months to see if it works and I'm completely zoned out or I'm completely hyperactive or I can't get my assignments done or I'm getting all my assignments done but it's like terrible work, I would feel more comfortable with those kinds of reactions in high school because I could go up to my teachers and say, "Here's my academic record. You know the kind of student I could be. Please help me out." And you hear stories all the time of, this teacher seems like all he does is he grades the first three assignments, and then based on that, he'll give you like a mark for every assignment after that in the range. So if he thinks you're an 80 student, you're gonna get 80s for the rest of the year. If he thinks you're a 60 student, doesn't matter how great your essay is, you're probably gonna get between like a 60 and a 75 because he like they're not reading your essays anymore. Like you hear all kinds of horror stories from high school, but also lazy stories from high school teachers. I've had some great high school teachers. I've had some terrible high school teachers. But at the end of the day, it was very obvious that whether they were terrible or they were great, a high school teacher's goal is to not only help you, a lot of the great ones want to help you and they want to see you succeed, but even the bad ones, so to speak, want to pass you out of their class and onto the next grade so that you graduate. For many reasons, some of it's, job reasons, finance, whatever. So I would be more comfortable taking medications in high school and playing around with that and feeling like I had leeway to fail or to not achieve my academic potential because as long as they knew what my potential was, they'd probably give me a good amount of slack. Whereas in university, A, I'm in my first year, it's the first month of my first year, so if I start on medications and I completely fall off the deep end, there's no track record for them to look back and say, "Well, you have a 3.5, you have a 3.8, you have a 4.0. So we'll give you leeway," because it's really obvious going to university that a lot of high schools give high grades for terrible work. So I can't even walk up with my high school transcript and say, "Well, look at this," because they can say, "We don't know the level of, prestige your teachers had or what kind of standards they had, whatever." So that's one thing. I feel like I would have less wiggle room. Also, I'm paying for my education, and I've seen a lot of people have breakdowns for multiple reasons, not necessarily medications. Maybe they experimented with drugs or alcohol when they shouldn't have. Maybe they just can't acclimate to the university, whatever it is. And they waste a semester, they waste a year, they waste 2 years, like that's money. That's thousands of dollars that you not only need to pay back, but also double because now you're retaking all of those courses, you're retaking all of those years, because you didn't get the marks you needed or you didn't get into classes you needed. And that's not what I want to go through, with medication, as well. And also, I want to do a lot of things with my life that require me to be at the top, and if not at the top, near the top for every single class I take in every single year that I'm going through. There's a lot of opportunities that I'm seeking that pretty much if you don't apply and get in the first time you apply, you won't really get in at all because they're not gonna consider someone who it took two tries to do as well as someone who did it on their first try, if that makes sense. Anyway, so I guess I wanted to explain that perspective because a lot of people, they wonder, should I go on meds? Should I not try meds? Blah, 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 blah. And I compare it all the time. I say meds are like therapy, or meds are like therapists. Medications and therapists are very similar because people tend to, they're reluctant to therapy. I've talked about this before. Again, more so on my anchor station, not necessarily in my podcast, but I've talked about this before and how I learned through myself and then through myself through the world, just outside, that you can't help someone who doesn't want to help themselves, and that includes you. You know, no one can force you to want to go to therapy or want to work on yourself if you don't want that, if you don't want it. And that includes yourself, you know? And that happened to me. The first time I went in recent history, because I've been to multiple therapists for multiple reasons, but in this last, bout of therapy for the same reasons that I'm talking about now. The first time I went because I knew something was wrong, but not necessarily because I knew something was wrong and I knew that I needed to do something to fix it, but I didn't necessarily want to learn what was wrong and I didn't necessarily want to fix it. So even though I myself forced myself to go to therapy because I just wasn't emotionally and mentally ready for what it entailed and the realities that we would cover, I didn't receive it well. I wasn't receptive to it well. And it took me, A, changing my mindset, but also finding someone who was better suited to me. And sometimes that happens. It's unfortunate because mental health services aren't covered by healthcare plans as much as physical health services. So, every time you go meet a new therapist and open up again, if they don't work, you're not only wasting money that you can't get back until a renewal period or maybe at all, but you're emotionally taxing yourself. And it's a hard avenue because a lot of people don't take it as seriously as if, say, you broke a leg or something. But there's a therapist out there for you. You just need to hold on long enough to find them. And that's the same thing with medication. There's medication out there for you. There's something that works. There's new trials every day for different concoctions of hormones and chemistry. And you take the hydrogen and like three phosphorus and blah, blah, blah. Take some sulfate and some sodium and mix it together. And oh, look, Zoloft 2.0, whatever. Like, there's a medication out there for you, but some people, I've had friends who were super lucky, and on their first try, either it was diazepam or Zoloft or Xanax or whatever, they took it and it leveled them out in a positive way, and they're functional human beings and they're less, I guess, dysfunctional or unstable as they were previously. And I know a lot of people who are on their fifth round of medications, or it's the same medication, but and the problem is too, like with each medication, there's different doses, whether it's 50, what is it, milligrams or 100 mil, whatever, 25 milligrams, like take this much a day, cut the tablet. Like, so even if you find a medication that works for you, it might not be the dosage that works for you. And I know people who are on their fifth try. I know people who have gone through three rounds and they're like, you know what, I'm done. Because sometimes medications can level you out in a negative way, which means you're level, you're not acting manic and you're not acting majorly depressed, but you're not acting at all because all it does is it zaps the emotion. Like you're so numb that you're a no person. I call that state. I call a state where you have no personality. You're just kind of like a shell of a human being. No personhood. You're just a no person, and that happens to a lot of people. They just turn into like a zombie. And some people go through rounds and rounds and rounds of being a zombie, and they find, what works for them. Some people go through the first round and they find what works for them. Some people go through round and round and then they say, you know what, I'm done trying. I personally, with the things that I'm trying to do with my life and the way that I am, the nature of how my symptoms manifest to me, I don't think I need medication too readily. I might look into it later on, maybe when I have a job. And I'm pretty established in my job, probably not my university years at all, because I'm spending a lot of money for this education. But if I'm in a job and I'm established in a job and I need it, I might revisit medication because then I have that safety net, I have that sort of reputation, and also it's just not a lot at stake. So I've talked about medications, my reasons for kind of shying away from medications and probably not taking any for anytime soon. And I was talking about how I don't think at this moment the way that my illness presents itself. I necessarily need them. And this is how we're getting into the topic of relationships. So, on the borderline personality front, the depression is kind of always there. It's where my passive suicidal ideation comes in. Passive versus active. Passive is where you're not necessarily making plans. You're not necessarily like, you think about it a lot. It's always in the back of your mind, but you're not making plans. You're not like researching things. It's more so just, if I walk out in the street, car hits me today, awesome. And then active is when, you know, you're making plans. You have a schedule. You're like, on this day, this is happening, blah, 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 blah. Either way, any state of suicidal ideation is not great. But depression's there. My anxiety's there. I feel nauseous a lot. But my borderline is characterized a lot by all or nothing, up or down feelings. And that's kind of how I live. As a child, I would get comments of being, you know, overbearing or too much or sometimes really annoying, but a lot of the times I just demand a lot. I'm very overbearing. I'm loyal to a fault because I also expect other people to be loyal to a fault when it comes to me. And this was all things that were happening when I say when I feel, but basically when I get excited about things, when I hope for things, when I feel, when I allow myself to be flooded with emotion, it's a lot of emotion. And I tend to spend, and I've learned over the years how to numb myself so that I don't feel anything at all. And I kind of don't really care about anything, and I'm really cold. And both of these, they're two extremes that are unhealthy. But I've kind of categorized it in two sections. And when I don't feel, and when I'm cold, and when I'm kind of removed, and you know, I don't seem excited about anything, I suffer on the inside, because I see other people, and I see other people having a good time, and you know, enjoying being out and enjoying going to fan expos and comic cons and hanging out and going to the park, and I don't feel that, or at least I don't let myself feel that. I'm good at, you know, turning off the faucet. And it really is a faucet. It's a faucet that doesn't have a drip setting. It's either the faucet is off, or you turn it literally 2 millimeters and the water pressure breaks and there's just water gushing out all over the bathroom and it's just feelings everywhere. That's kind of how it is. Or like a bathroom faucet where either the water's super, super cold and then you turn it literally a millimeter and it's scalding hot and you can't find lukewarm. And I tend to keep myself in that cold setting. I'm really good at compartmentalizing, which I've talked about before, which is where I take in a situation. Say it's something like, let's go on a trip in a month. And generally, a normal person, or I guess a level person, I don't want to say normal, a level person would take this. They'd be like, oh, yay, excited. They'll plan for it. And say it doesn't work out, they'll be like, oh, that kind of sucks. I was excited for it. You know, maybe next year, let's move forward. I have issues with letting things go and with things that I hope for not panning out. So for people who have, you know, proper emotional regulation, they'll just be like, oh, that's unfortunate that this didn't happen. I'm disappointed. I'll sit my disappointment for a couple days to a week, and then we can talk about another trip, and I'll go back to work, and I'll make some more money, and make sure that it happens next time. Whereas to me, it's not just an inconvenience. It's not just a cool thing that is never going to happen. It's like the end of the world. Why is life doing this to me? You know, I was so excited for this thing. No one keeps their promises. Blah, 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 blah. I just want to end my, like, you know, whatever. So to combat that, I just don't get excited for the trip at all, ever. And then my friends come up to me and they're like, oh, aren't you so excited? Aren't you like ready to go to this place and do this thing? And I'm like, uh-huh. And then they get mad and they say, you know, you're not excited about anything. Blah, 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 blah. But I find that reaction where I'm never excited and people wonder why, but also I can still go and I have a good time in the moment when it's 100% sure that the moment's happening because I'm in the moment, because then I can't get disappointed because I'm literally in the moment. But I don't get excited prior to shield myself from that feeling of disappointment because I can't cope with it very well. Which is unfortunate because then I seem not so much boring. I tend to seem just standoffish and cold and uncaring. And it's not that I don't want to care. It's just I'm aware that I can't care. And then I get comments about it, but generally, you know, then we get into the moment and then I lighten up a little and then everyone has a great time. But still on the inside, I get kind of sad because I see my friends and they're excited when it's appropriate to be excited, and they move on when it's appropriate to move on. They let go of things when it's appropriate to let go of things, and I can't do that. So I just don't work through those emotions at all. And I've tried working through the emotions, and usually what happens when I try is that, you know, I allow, and the thing is, it's really easy for me to, once I'm in an unfeeling state, to kind of stay that way and to repress any sort of present emotion. The issue comes when I decide to crack the faucet a little bit and feel a little, and then I end up feeling everything. And then it seems like I can't turn off the water flow. Once the water flow is turned off, once the emotions are turned off, it's really easy to stay in that state. It's also really easy to pull myself out of that state by getting excited. But once I do get excited or hopeful or feel anything of any substance towards a situation that's not necessarily set in stone or a situation that I can't control 100%, all my emotions start flooding out, and there's no way to control it. There's no way to stuff them back in a box until it kind of blows over and I go through my whole manic cycle or whatnot. And it's really difficult because when things go good and they keep going good, I just stay in this high of feeling, and then it's awesome because, like, I usually don't feel. So it's like, this is what people feel like in their normal lives. But then if things go wrong, which they are want to do, because usually the things that I'm excited about have to do with other people and I can't stage manage other people, that's when it turns real ugly, and the emotions go from really intense positive emotions swirling around in my head to really intense crashing negative emotions, and I throw tantrums and I have panic attacks, and I have all kinds of adverse social interactions which put people off. And that's kind of where I draw the line, is where when I'm cold and unfeeling, I put people off for a moment, but then, you know, I can kind of get into an event when I'm, like, in the midst of it, and then we all have a good time, and then we go home. Whereas if I'm feeling, and I'm emotional, and then things go wrong, I tend to not be able to let it go. I can't stop talking about it. I tend to bother people. I become annoying, and instead of putting people off for a moment, and then people writing off my coldness and standoffish as just, you know, me being who I am. When I'm manic and when I'm overbearing and when I'm annoying, people write it off as me being who I am, but then they also don't want to talk to me ever again, you know? So it's two unhealthy extremes. It's two extremes that put people off, but one extreme is more socially acceptable because I can chalk it up to just, like, I can literally just have that persona, especially as a young adult. I can have that persona of, like, oh, I'm just, like, I don't care about anything. Like, I don't get excited about anything. And even some people find that cool, because I guess as a teen, you just, like, you don't want to think anything's cool. So, like, I get clout that way. Whereas the other extreme is very unsocially acceptable, where, you know, you're calling someone 5 times in a row, like, why don't you want to go on this trip with me? Here's 3 different ways that you can transfer out of this program and into this program so that we can be together forever. And then they're like, okay, you're becoming a little much, please stop. And then you're like, I don't know how to stop because I can't turn off my faucet of emotions. And then they're like, I'm never going to talk to you again. So it's sad that I need to choose between, you know, those two levels, or at least I've had to choose between those two levels. We'll see how much DBT works if I get into this group. But because of that, that very much dictates, you know, how I do things and when I do things and why I do things and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that plays into relationships a lot, or at least intimate relationships. Business relationships, not too much, because they're supposed to be cordial. They're supposed to be, I mean, not they're supposed to be, but they're generally, like, they're cordial, they're professional, they're kind of cold, you know, like, I care about you in a business, like, I care about you as much as I care about the business, and I care about you in any subject matter that pertains to the general viability of the business or a shared interest of making money through this business or venture and endeavor. So, you know, if your mental health is shot, I may or may not care as a friend, but I more so care as a coworker who needs you to be on your A game so that we can get something done so that we can continue to have a viable business and keep getting paid. Friendships I've learned to navigate because you have a bunch of different kinds of friends. And the good thing about friends is that, again, you have other friends. So social media has actually helped me a lot with this because if I have a friend that I don't necessarily want to talk to, not because of anything that has to do with them, but because I've talked about this before, where a good way to keep me from becoming the feely, overbearing, manic mess is that I devalue my friendships. And I basically, a lot of my friends are, in my mind, more so, like, not necessarily strangers, but just, I have the emotional attachment to them as I do any random acquaintance that I have, you know, like, even though I've known this person for 6 years, and, like, we're supposed to be best friends, we're really close, I have as much of attachment to them as I do as that girl that I met two doors down from me in my dorm, like, half a day ago. And the only difference between my 6 year friendship and that girl is that I will put more brain power into remembering small details about my close friends and, checking up on them, not necessarily because I have an inherent instinct to text them and say, oh, check on this person and see if their, like, math test went well, to the point where literally sometimes I have made reminders on my phone that's been like, text so-and-so 2 weeks from now to ask them about that job interview they just told you about, because if not, I file that information away in the same place that I would file the information away of a random acquaintance, and then I might forget, and then my friends get mad because we're supposed to be really close friends, but emotionally I can't let myself feel like really close to them. But social media has been a great way to combat that, because there, a lot of them to me are the emotional attachment level of an acquaintance. Sometimes they'll be like, oh my gosh, let's hang out. Like, let's hang out right now. And they're so excited to see me because emotionally to them, I am a close friend. But I don't necessarily want to see them because I don't have that closeness emotionally or intrinsically. So I can kind of get out of it, and I can kind of skirt my way around it and then prolong my avoiding seeing them in person and spending a lot of hours with them by, you know, catching up with them on social media, you know, liking something on Facebook, tagging them something on Twitter. Honestly, for people like me, a really great thing is to find memes that, you know, they think are funny and, like, message them and say, like, this reminded me of you, because everyone wants to know that, like, they're crossing your mind and they're important. So what you do is you find a meme that's like an inside joke and you, like, send it to them and you're like, oh my gosh, like, this reminds me of you, and also how's school going? Then you have like a nice 5 minute conversation, and then, you know, you had a social interaction that didn't have to be you with them for hours at a time. And then because you have that social interaction, you don't feel as bad prolonging the time period before you actually do see them in person, because there are other ways you guys can communicate. But the main point of that whole diatribe of me emotionally detaching from myself, from my friends, because emotionally attaching to my friends just gets really messy and really overbearing and, like, really annoying, and I'm confused and they feel smothered and blah blah blah, blah. So it's, and or I feel all these emotions but I don't let myself express them, and then they disappoint me and I feel twice as disappointed because I'm feeling this anyway. So I just burped, I'm sorry. Anyway, a good thing about that is that because you are friends, and friendships are not exclusive necessarily, they have other friends. So when you are being standoffish, or when you have a favorite person, which is something that I have a lot, and a lot of people with emotional regulation, you know, like, relationship issues have, where I will have people that I become friends with in like a week, and they will be like my new best friend. And I have one, like, childhood, well, I have a couple of really close friends. Pretty much all of my long-term friends are really, really close friends. I don't have a lot of casual friends. It's just not something I'm really comfortable with, not something I do very well because of the way that I structure my friendships. Casual friends kind of fall by the wayside because I can hardly even muster up, like, the energy and desire to keep up with my close friends, and you're just a casual friend. Like, no, all my friends are generally close friends. But I've had close friends, you know, come up to me and make comments about my FPs or my favorite persons, where they say, you know, you met this girl a week ago and now you hang out every single day, you never text me back. So basically, for me and for a lot of people I found, especially people with borderline and similar things, emotional things, relationship things, favorite people are people that you meet. You it can be an instant attachment. You could have known them for years, but like something they say or something they do just like clicks for you. For me, with the way I am, a lot of the times my favorite people manifest themselves when I can get something from them, not necessarily monetary, but you know, if I'm feeling really, really low on a self-esteem front and they really make me feel good, even if it's unhealthy, you know, even if like what they do in our friendship isn't, if they're not a good friend, but like somehow the things they say to me or like whatever, they always pay for something or whatever, and I always feel like pampered or I feel wanted or whatever. Something in my brain will just click, and I will have impulses and desires to literally hang out with this person all the time, text this person all the time. My focuses are like tunnel vision on this person, and every other, not everything else, like I still get my work done and I still go to school, whatever, but every other like personal relationship, every other friend falls by the wayside, and all I do is want to talk to this one person, hang out with this one person, do things with this one person. And the difference between them and a best friend tend to be that it's more so an infatuation. Sometimes my favorite, I develop a favorite person because I'm trying to get to another person, or because my favorite person seems like a stepping ladder to, I don't know, like a work, like a work, oh geez, like a work achievement or like a volunteering achievement, or they seem to be able to help connect me to something that I want. So I'm like, my brain's like, okay, your next desire, just hang out with this person, talk to this person, blah, whatnot. So a really big thing that clues me into someone becoming a favorite person is that I might have known them for years and I was really standoffish about kind of being their friend, and then they say one thing or they tell me something, and then immediately I'm like, oh my God, let's be best friends forever. Or I just meet this person and it's immediate click, but it's not so much an immediate click where it's like, oh, you're a cool person, maybe if we see each other or like text, you know, on and off, and then it's a gradual friendship. But no, it's literally like, I just met this person and I want to be around them constantly 24/7, like it, like an obsession. Another, in hindsight, another thing that sets favorite people apart from just, you know, friendships coming and going, like regular, stable, healthy friendships, is that when it ends, it tends to be all of my friendship breakups, quote unquote, or breakups in general, or endings of like relations with people tend to be very, not necessarily abrupt, but very messy because of the way that I've just internalized conflict and learned about how to deal with conflict. But specifically with favorite people, it tends to be very sudden. Emotionally, it tends to be like, you know, every single day for the past 3 weeks, I've wanted to hang out with this person, text this person, talk to this person, whatnot. And literally, I wake up one day and I think, you know what, they're not all that great, to the point where I never want to talk to them again, or I have no desire. And, or if the person's helping me achieve a milestone, and then I achieve that milestone, and then I have no real desire to spend any time with that person ever again. Whereas, literally, like 24, 48 hours previous, all I wanted to, like, I literally wanted to move in with this person. And now they could move like across the earth, and I think I would actually feel better for it because then I'd have an excuse for not talking to them. So, favorite people are very distinct, or not necessarily fairly distinct. It could be really hard to determine who's a favorite person and who's a healthy friendship, especially if you generally just don't have healthy relationships in general. But favorite people, from an outside point of view, or from just an analytic point of view, can be really easy to point out for the fact that they're really quick to be a prominent position in your life, even if you've known them for years, especially if you've known them for years and you haven't really been interested in being their friend, and then, you know, one day you hang out with them for like a couple seconds, or you hang out with them for a little bit, and you literally want to like marry them and be a part of their family and like be with them forever. Not necessarily in a romantic way, but just like you want to spend all your time with them. You think they're the coolest person ever. And then when things end, it literally goes from like, this person's coolest person ever, I wish I was them, with them, whatever, 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 to this person could literally die and I would not care, you know, I wouldn't go to the funeral. So it's really quick from putting someone on a pedestal to literally thinking they are worth as much as the dirt in your most prominent park in the city, I suppose. So it's not necessarily a gradual fading out of friendships. It's not even necessarily like this person murdered your family and you have a reason for not liking them. It's just you had no necessary reason, or you had a really materialistic reason for wanting to be around them, and then you have no real reason for effectively, you don't even hate them, you just honestly don't think that you're worth their time in like a span of hours. Like, you wake up one morning, you're like, you know what, never mind. Or you get what you want, and then you realize that you don't actually like them as a person, you just liked the way they helped you achieve something, and that's kind of what it's like to have a favorite person. And the issue with this is, okay, so I talked about favorite people, I've talked about friendships. Okay, so basically the thing is, like, when I have a favorite person, for example, and I fixate on one person and all my friendships fall by the wayside, my other friends, even if they feel like a little hurt or whatever, like, I still check in with them. It's just not the same as if I was unattached to a person. And favorite people tend to happen to me whether or not I'm feeling or whether or not I'm unfeeling. It's like an involuntary impulse to a person and what they may or may not add to my life. But a good thing is that in the meantime, my friends can go hang out with their other friends because they have other friends. And friendships have natural ebbs and flows. So as long as I'm not being rude or blowing them off for like years or like half a year at a time, they can go hang out with other people for a couple of weeks while I go through what I'm going through, and then we can meet up and be close friends again. Then I can go find another favorite person, or just not even find a favorite person, but not want to talk to this specific friend for a little while because of the way that my emotions are, and they can go hang out with someone else. The issue with intimate relationships, especially if you're monogamous or you enjoy monogamy, you're non-polyamorous, as I am, it's difficult because whether I have a boyfriend or a girlfriend or whatnot, that person cannot go to their other girlfriend while I am busy being disinterested in our relationship, if that makes sense. So it's really difficult because the way that I kind of create space with my friendships, and sometimes I get really close with my friends too, and that kind of close, affectionate side of myself, even when I'm uncaring, sometimes my friends become favorite people. Maybe they're starting this new activity that I really like, so they're my friend, but I have that same attachment as a favorite person. The difference is, though, when I'm done with them as a specific favorite person, instead of just devaluing them completely, they just go back to being like that kind of acquaintance place in my head, instead of, you know, like this awesome person that I want to hang out with all the time. I have a couple of friends who started out as favorite people and I got really attached to, and then just through circumstance we were able to fall into a comfortable friendship, which was nice, but most of the time my favorite people relationships crash and burn. Anyway, yeah, that affectionate side, that favorite person side works with a relationship because I would hope that the people or person you are dating or with you really enjoy. But when it comes to being, you know, standoffish and cold, that doesn't work, especially if it's prolonged for weeks or months at a time. So what either happens is that you go into a relationship like this and they get tired of you not really getting excited no matter how much they try, you know, like they try and make you happy, they try and surprise you, and nothing makes you happy because nothing makes you excited, or you're even angry at surprises, because if you're someone like me, I don't know how to react to surprises. I tell people all the time not to surprise me. I'm really specific about gifts that I want because I know how to react to things that I want, but then if people kind of stray away from that, I can be seen as rude or ungrateful because I don't know how to. Like, if I ask for, like, a journal for Christmas, and then you get me, like, a shirt from a store that I don't, or you get me, like, a gift card to a store that I don't shop at, I'll look at you and I'll say, even if you didn't want to get the book, you could have just gotten me the gift card for the same amount of money for a bookstore. And then I seem ungrateful, but really, it's just, I'm very specific. I don't like surprises. Or if you're going to surprise me, I'll give you a preset of, like, these are three different surprise parties that I would like. Choose one of the three. Don't go with Rainbow Princess Unicorn because I will not enjoy Rainbow Princess Unicorn. Anyway, which doesn't work when someone is just hellbent on, like, you know, trying to make you happy. Whereas friendships don't have that kind of, I guess, I don't want to say severity, but that kind of expectation attached to them. Like, I don't expect my friends to magically change my life and make me happy and, like, fall out of the sky with love and rainbows, whatever. Like, we're just friends. It's casual. I have multiple friends because each friend adds something to my life. Same thing, like, if one friend doesn't get something from me, they have three other friends that they can get that thing from. Whereas, especially if you practice monogamy, you're kind of hoping that this one person has everything you're looking for in a partner and more to present. And you're also hoping that you can be everything that that person wants in a partner and more. But when you're, you know, with someone who either doesn't know what they want, or what they want is not something that you can't give them, because what they want has to do with, like, past trauma, which is something that has to do with me. Or no matter how hard you try, you won't give them what they want because of issues they have, and you'll never whatever you do won't ever be good enough, or it's not even a matter of good enough, it's just whatever you do won't be satisfactory because of the way that they react. You know, it can be really stressful and really disparaging, and you feel like you're not enough because there's all these expectations. And and I'm speaking from the perspective of someone dating me. I'm speaking from the perspective of my girlfriend and or boyfriend, whereas also a part of being just kind of relatively uncaring, relatively emotionless, is the fact that I don't care. So what happens is, like, you'll introduce me to your parents, and I'm actually really good with adults, so it's not that I'm gonna walk in rude or whatnot, but I also don't generally care about their opinion. So if you're like, oh, you have a tattoo, my mom doesn't like people with tattoos, and we've only been dating for a couple months. Do you think you could cover it up and maybe expose it, like, when we're, like, 6 years into our marriage? I will look you in the face and say, you know, no, I'm gonna wear what I want, and that's up to you to figure out with your family. So it's also stressful, because if you don't care, you also become uncompromising, and you won't work with this other person. And then this other person needs to pick up not only the slack of what you expect of them, but they also need to kind of swallow the things they expect of you, because they know that you won't rise to their demand, or their, I guess, it's not necessarily demand, it's more so, not really a preference, it's more so, oh, what's the word? It's not a suggestion, their request. You won't rise to their request. And then it becomes an ultimatum, where, like, if you're not willing to meet them in the middle, they, you know, it's really stressful. On the other hand, I can go into relationships completely feeling, but that means that all of my hope and excitement and everything relies on you, and then it's still difficult, because whereas in the beginning, everything you tried to do was never satisfactory because I just don't care about what you try and do, now everything you try to do isn't satisfactory because in my head I'm concocting that I'm going to feel all of these things, and it's going to be exciting, and, like, the way you do it's going to, like, make me cry, but because I also have residual issues, though, the way that I imagine things going and just the reality of the way things go, it's never as magical or fantastical as I hope it is. And then I get upset, and because I'm feeling it, it's crying and it's anger, and, you know, instead of just general indifference, it's, like, literally expressing emotions. And then it can be stressful because now you feel like you hurt me, or nothing's, or still nothing satisfactory, but now I'm, like, crying about it instead of just, you know, shrugging about it. Furthermore, again, when I start to feel, and you make me promises of, like, we'll go to this concert, we'll do this in the summer, and then we'll do this in the fall, you know, you can say that in passing, but then 2 weeks later think, you know, this isn't working for me, I actually want to break up. Whereas someone like me, when I feel, and I'm either 0% emotion or 100% emotion. When I'm 0% emotion and you say, like, oh, let's do this thing in the fall, I'll just snort and move on, and then you'll feel invalidated because I don't want to make plans with you. But that if I'm 100% feeling and you say, oh, we'll do this thing in the fall, and then we break up nowhere near the fall, I will just keep replaying in my head, but you said we'd do this in the fall, but you said we'd go pumpkin picking, but you said we'd do this, but you said, you know. And it's like, that's, those words are like an unwritten promise that we would at least be together until that point in time. So either I don't get excited for anything, and then it sucks because you're like, you're not excited for anything, nothing I do is satisfactory, or I get excited for everything, and it's like, you wrote it in stone, and then we don't work out, or we get in a fight, or whatever, and then in my head it's just like, but you promised me this, and then I can't let go. And either I can swallow those feelings, which I've done before, but then I'm like dealing with it inside, and I feel all those feelings inside, and I feel all that disappointment and anger, and, like, I'm not good enough and worthlessness inside, or I express it, which involves me imposing myself on another person, which I do anyway if I'm feeling and I'm friends with someone or I'm dating someone, but it's even worse because if I'm imposing myself on someone who's already stated that, like, they're over me as a person, now it's like imposing myself on a stranger. Like, this person's literally said, like, all right, like, let's part ways, but I'm feeling and I'm expressing those feelings. So now this person has clearly stated, like, you know, I'm going to move on with my life, and I'm here in the corner stomping my foot saying, but you can't, like, on the floor crying, holding on to their legs. Anyway, so either, again, extreme is not healthy and is generally not sustainable, but it's fairly sustainable in a business capacity, as I've explained. Or it's sustainable in a business capacity, as I explained, because there's not a lot of expectation. Fairly sustainable in friendships, depending on the kind of friendship, whether it's genuine and healthy or whether it's like a favorite person kind of thing, which I've explained. Because there's expectation in a friendship, but it's less so your friend needs to complete you, and just more so that your friend has a lot of positives and shared interests that you like, and their quirks and their negative, you know, emotional aspects, as long as they're not offensive or dangerous, you just kind of overlook them. And if they're too overbearing, you just kind of schedule yourself so you only hang out with this person like once every couple months. But those two extremes, as I've explained or tried to explain, doesn't work for intimate relationships, at least that I've found, really at all. Even if you, this is going to get really bleak, but even if you, you know, disclose to this person and you say, like, this is how I act, a lot of people are very great at supporting you when you seem to be level. A, because they don't want to seem like the bad guy and they don't want to seem like they're exclusionary or discriminatory, and B, because they don't actually understand what you're saying or what you're getting at. So they're really quick to say, oh, no, like, we can work through it, I'll be there for you, blah, 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 blah. And then when you actually get into, like, a numb, depressive, unfeeling low for weeks or months at a time, because that's how mental illness works, or when you're in a manic high for weeks or months at a time and you really start exhibiting negative socially unacceptable actions, that's when people are like, whoa, I accepted this in theory, but in practice, in real life, this is actually too much or too little. So even when you disclose how you are, you're still kind of taking a chance on someone saying that they'll, like, it's one thing if, you know, everything's in concept, and the relationship's in concept, and the thought of, you know, being with someone is a concept, and you can make that fantasy into what you want it to be because it didn't actually happen, and then you can just kind of leave that fantasy in your head and, like, move on with your life. It's another thing if someone literally says, you know what, I will take it, like, I will give it my best shot, I will see you at your best, at your worst, and I will actively try to support you and love all of it. And then they come to you and they say, I tried my best, but it wasn't enough, or it was too much, because it's no longer a fantasy, and you can't spin that any other way, because it actually happened, it's what happened. So basically, my opinion is just, actually, I don't know, I just, it's hard either way, again, and then you need to look at yourself, and you need to realize, or not realize, but you get the sense of dread, just like the sense of, no matter what I do, it's not good enough, blah, 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 whatever. So I choose to abstain from, I guess, intimate relationships. Before I got into something relatively serious, I kind of knew the way that I was, and I always shied away from it, no matter how many people came up to me and was like, I found this great guy for you, and it's like, or, you know, this girl's really cool, and I'm like, you know what, maybe not. And then I gave it the good old college try, and I tried with a person. And everything came true. And what was worse is that I realized what I was doing, and I realized that everything was coming true, and I realized that I was acting a certain way that's socially unacceptable. But because of the way my panic attacks are set up, it was like watching, it wasn't even like someone else was controlling my body. It was like I was fighting myself. And the rational part of my brain was consistently losing with the part of me that didn't want to feel like I was dying every time I had another panic attack for not, like, submitting to urges that made me do things that were socially unacceptable. And I never want to go through that again. And people kind of, you know, they always invalidate that experience. And they say, well, you know, one day you're going to find someone and they're going to light your world on fire. And like, none of these things are going to matter. Or you're so young. And that was like one example, one relationship. Like, you're going to grow up and you're whatever. And you know what? I might wake up at 25. I might wake up at 30. I might wake up tomorrow and think, my ideas on marriage and relationships are wrong. And I'm going to try again. Or I might meet someone at any point in my life and think, this person's the one, and this person's lit my life on fire, and like, we're gonna try and work through it, we're gonna be great. But the thing is, that hasn't happened, and realistically, that probably won't happen because my life isn't a fairy tale. And it really sucks when you're like talking to people and they're like, oh, like, who are you talking to? Like, don't you want to find someone? And you say, not really, because XYZ. And they say, oh, you're just young, like, you don't know what you're looking for, blah 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 blah. And you're like, no, you're just saying that because you think I'm a cynic. But when I'm dating your friend and your friend's complaining because I've called them 5 times in under 2 minutes, like, you're gonna know that I can't do that. I can't work through emotions, and you also can't have a sustainable relationship where there's no emotion coming from one party. It doesn't work, or at least in my experience, for me, it doesn't work. And I also have, like, inevitably, I personally have all these inflated expectations about my partner because I'm trying to compensate for things that I never received in my childhood sometimes. And that's just a lot of pressure to put on someone else. So who knows? Maybe I'll go through therapy and I'll come out of it and I'll think I'm ready to embark on a significant, serious, intimate relationship. But I doubt it. And I feel like even if I do feel that way, it would come from an inflated, unsustainable sense of something, and it would probably just be a general mess. And there's a segment on my station on Anchor that I'm probably gonna add, like, I'm gonna attach to the end of this episode, after I ask my question of the day or make my statement of the day or whatever. And it was literally me just talking about, you know, choices, because I had a friend say something like that to me on that day, and it was raw and right in the forefront of my mind of how, not necessarily offended, but just put off I was, because literally, and they understand too, because they have their own issues, and literally they were saying, like, oh, you're just one of those people that's like, love doesn't matter, blah blah blah. And I'm like, no, I mean, I acknowledge that some people have great relationships and they find their soulmate, or they don't, but they date a bunch of people, then they find whoever's right for them because, you know, they've learned from experience or they got the right person on the first try. Some people are good for certain things. There are certain people who will never make it, well, most people never make it to the moon. There are certain people who are not apt or not programmed to graduate high school. There are certain people who are better for college than university. You know, there's a lot of doctors in the world. Not everyone's going to be a doctor. I think sometimes we take things that we think are inherently human, and because we think they are inherently human, it applies to every human. So, you know, people look at me and they say, like, oh, you'll find love, you'll find someone, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, I mean, I might, which is fine, but just the way that I am, I'm not saying I won't, but I'm saying the way that I am as a person, I'll either ruin it, or even if it's good, it'll just be really stressful, because I'm always stressed out in romantic relationships. So either it's gonna work, but I'm always on edge, or it won't work, and then it's a waste of time. And it's even harder because I am not aromantic or asexual. It's something that I've, you know, like, I want to have, it would be nice to have a committed monogamous relationship with someone else. It's not like I'm sitting here like, no, I just inherently, I don't want that. That's not my preference. It is my preference. I just also acknowledge that there are certain things, certain issues I have that I'm working through in my life that make me really apt to do other things. Like, I, for example, intellectually, I'm able to do a lot of things, you know, with writing and words and whatnot, and school-wise, and I have a lot of discipline. I talk about how I put in 8 hours of, like, I treat full-time schooling like a job, and I put in 8 hours a day, and I'll literally sit in a library for hours on end studying. Some people can't, like, they don't have the attention span to study more than 20 minutes. You know, that's just something I'm apt to do. Emotionally, I'm not apt to be committed to another person for be emotionally committed to another person where I'm literally like putting all my eggs in one basket, because I either am really stressed out, or I'm too much or too little, or I expect too much from them, or I don't expect anything at all, and then what's the point? And that's not to say that I don't wish to have a functional, nice, loving relationship. I wish, but it's just the odds of that happening are so low compared to the odds of it just being a mess, that I don't necessarily want to try. I went to a frat party a couple of nights ago with a new friend, and it really sucks. I don't really like going to parties anymore. Pre the relationship that I was in, I guess I can say a while back now, but a couple months ago, I liked going to parties, especially with close friends, because usually what we would do is, like, we would, like, I'm fine in a party setting. I don't have crowd anxiety, but I'm also not that girl who gets, like, super drunk and is, like, friends with everyone, like, sloppy, like, crying in the corner halfway through the night because her ex's ex is whatever, you know, like, I'm chill. I go in with my three friends. We kind of find a corner to ourselves. And then even though we're in this party with a bunch of people, we kind of make it our own mini party, or we'll find like a room in the basement and we'll just kind of like sit and chill and use someone else's house as like a way to hang out. And it's nice because other chill people will like come find us and we'll make new friends and just kind of like hang out in a corner. But we're also by no means like the life of the party. Which, I mean, is cool because you also get to say you were there and you get to, like, maybe catch up for a little bit with, like, other people you generally don't hang out with. But really, you're just hanging out with, like, the same people you'd hang out with in your free time. And the only thing that made it more worth it to me to go to parties was also, like, to maybe meet someone special, to be, like, a significant other. And then it happened. And then I did. And then it became a mess. And now, you know, like, I go to frats and I go to parties. And I really have no desire to be there because either I'm there with people who aren't like me and they want to be the life of the party and I'm like, you know what, I don't want to get so drunk I forget my name and then cry in a corner and then not be sure if I'll get home safe. That's not really my life, but that's what you guys want to do. And additionally, I'm not even here to maybe like meet someone or hang out with someone or anything because I know how terribly that will probably end up. So, like, it sucks because, like, I don't want to go to really parties anymore, or, like, big, like, outings or, like, get-togethers, you know? I just kind of want to hang out with the friends that I have when the time is right and then go to bed at a reasonable hour and then wake up fresh-faced in the morning. And, like, I tend to just throw myself into my work, whether that is educational or professional. And I have less and less desire for social gatherings because, like, friendships less so, but still can turn into a mess for me. And I have enough friends, you know. There's also a point with me where, like, I'll have a certain amount of friends, you know, say, like, 5 to 8. And they're close friends. Again, I don't really have a lot. I have, like, maybe one casual friend. I used to have two, and then that casual friend became a favorite person, and then it became a mess, and I stopped being friends with that person. So I have, like, one casual friend and then a lot of close friends. And even people who want to be my friend, like, it's hard because of the way that I set up my attachment. Like, it's hard to literally, my friendships turn into a job. I literally need to keep reminders, like, in my phone, like, text this person, ask this person about this, or I will forget, or I'll get too interested in my own business that I'll forget about my long-term friends, especially now that we don't all go to the same school, and, like, we're in different schools and different parts of the country, or even out of the country. It's even more of a job. So it's hard for me as well to maintain, like, some people have, like, 20, 30 friends, like, they're in a sorority, they're friends with, like, 40 girls, like, they hang out every night, every other night, they're going out with a different group of people, like, that's not my life. Yeah, so that's kind of a long-winded explanation about why, you know. So I'm a child of divorce. A lot of pretty much every single family member, they've been through divorces, and most of them have been messy. So that's another thing, another topic for another time. But I've also not been around a lot of stable, happy, long-lasting relationships. So aside from my own issues, even before I knew I had these issues, like, even as a young child, I never wanted to get married. I think it's a waste of money. I think it's a waste of time. I think the odds of you being together forever, even if you're happy in the beginning, I think the odds of being happy forever and ever are so low that not only are you paying, some people make like pay tens of thousands of dollars on their weddings, like a down payment on like a house or like some, you know, something that will bring you equity. And this is bashing marriage, and honestly, I have no interest. I always want to hear your takes on things and like your own personal experience, which is fine. Like you can come to me and say like, I have BPD or XYZ, and like this is my relationship, and this is how we like. I want to hear your stories, but I have no interest in you coming to me to try and like fight me on my opinions, if that makes sense. Like if you come to me and you say like, hey, I listen to your podcast, I think it's really cool, and this is my life, and this is how like BPD's affected my relationships. I've gone through like three relationships, but I found a man or I found a woman, and like we're great, or like I'm like you, and I don't want to date it, whatever. Like I want to hear your stories, I want to connect with you. But if you come to me and you're like, your opinions on marriage are wrong, and this is why. I will probably like block you or mute you because my opinions aren't like my. You could love marriage. You can want to get married five times a year, and that's as valid for your life because you're not hurting anyone else as long as you can pay for it and you don't have kids that are starving because you want to pay for your marriage, and you're not hurting my life. So like, do what you want. But also, my stance on marriage for my life is just as valid as your stance on marriage for your life. So again, come to me with your stories. Tell me about your life. Tell me about how your mental health issue affects you. If you don't have a mental health issue but you just want to connect, tell me about like how your life is. I want to hear about your life. But don't come to me and be like, your opinions on medication is wrong and this is why you should take my. Tell me about how medications work for you or not work for you, but like don't fight me anyway. So basically, I personally think marriages, or a lot of marriages that I've been to, are a huge waste of money, especially if you get divorced within the first 2 years. And then I'm like, wow. And then you need to pay not only to get a divorce, but if you have any shared assets, you need to pay to divide those. And if you have kids, you're paying for so many years. And then you usually, especially if it's or not, there's not even a time frame, but a lot of, or some divorces, a lot of the divorces I've seen come from a place of anger and hurt and frustration. So not only are you dividing up assets, but people are petty and they're hurt and there's a lot of rage and a lot of negative emotions. So sometimes you're fighting over things that don't even matter to either of you. You're what matters more is the bragging right to say like, oh, I got this thing, which is really unfortunate because not only are you fighting for no reason and you're angry for no reason, but now you're paying money. You're paying more money to a lawyer. Like, you're paying money to a lawyer to like fight over like a shirt. A shirt that doesn't fit either of you. A shirt that you got from like a conference in Colorado. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's like a pen and it's a really nice pen and it costs like $50 and so one of you can just go buy the same pen from Walmart, but you're fighting over this pen because it's really just the symbolic of like who wins the divorce, and then you're in court for an extra 3 weeks fighting over this pen, and you're paying an extra $10,000. Like, why? Anyway, so as you can tell, the thought of marriage works me up. It makes me actually really tense when people ask me about, you know, when are you gonna get married? And I'm like, never. I can't deal with that kind of commitment to another person. I can't even date someone for more than a month and a half. Anyway, so again, and here I was afraid that I wouldn't have enough content, and I'm literally about to hit my 90, like it's been an hour and 12 minutes, and I have a 90 minute max before I need to like divide this up, because of the way that the service I use to upload is. But anyway, I'm gonna get real quick to my ending real quick because I have those plugs to do. So basically, as always, connect with me on Twitter, reply to any of the three kind of parts of this, resources, medications, or relationships on Twitter, DM me or tweet me at PersBorderline, at P-E-R-S Borderline. Please get Anchor, check me out on Anchor. That's the app that I use to broadcast my podcast onto external podcasting services. Furthermore, Anchor is a social media platform in and of itself, so it's a social media platform but for audio. If you get an account, you can call into my station actually and have your voice featured onto my episodes or even just on my station. You can hear an example of this on my episode called Exposing Mental Health, or like mental health issues or whatever. You'll hear a bunch of different voices as well as my own on that episode. And those voices aren't because I interviewed those people. Those voices are because within the app, they called into my station from wherever they are in the world. And I was able to take the segments that they called in with, the audio bites that they called in with, and add it to an episode. So you have an opportunity to be in my episode. If you tell me you're from an external podcasting, like tell me like, hey, I'm from Apple Podcasts, whatever. I found you on Twitter, whatever. I will not only shout you out on my station, but I'll also go to your account, whether or not you're using it to just listen or whether you want to broadcast yourself, because posting podcasts on Anchor are free. Whichever one, I will go to your station and I will call into your station and also send you a personalized shout out, or just a personalized thank you, as well as shouting you out generally on my own station. So get Anchor. My Anchor is personally borderline, it's the same name as my podcast, wherever you're listening to my podcast right now. Connect with me on Twitter at persborderline, at persborderline, and today you can answer one or all or some of these questions. One of them, actually, I'm not going to ask a question about resources because it's pretty whatever, but one of them is just, do you take any sort of medication for your mental health issue? Why or why not? What has your experience been? Has it been a positive? Has it been negative? Are you one of those lucky people who, like, on your first try, you found the right dosage in medication? Have you been working through it? Have you already worked through it, but now you are, have you found what you need? And also, secondly, especially people with, like, emotional regulation issues and relationship issues, but this is open to anyone, what's your stances on relationships, and how have your relationships gone in the past, and how have your views on relationships kind of manifested over time? I know that's a lot of questions for two very, like, not broad, but very different subjects. Answer them all, answer some, tweet at me, call in, whatever, DM me. You might even want to DM me just because it's a longer format, but let me know that you want me to screenshot it and post it, and I'll screenshot and post it. If you don't want me to screenshot and post it, don't say that, and I'll just keep it private, whatever. I was gonna say something, but I forgot, literally. I'm gonna add that segment to the end of this if I can find it, and then you can hear my in-time response to this whole subject. There was something else I completely forgot. It was about engagement, resources, medications, relationships. Tweet me. Find me on Anchor. There was literally something that I wanted to say, and I forgot what it was that I wanted to say. Ask me questions if you want. Give me suggestions. Say, hey, I want to hear your opinion on this, and I'll tell you my opinion on whatever it is. All right, guys. Oh, I can't remember. I just remembered. It's, I forgot to call you guys my family in recovery and in discovery. I've explained this before. I'm going to explain it real quick again. Recovery, I'll call you my recoverers and my discoverers, but honestly, that's a lot of R's, so I just say my family in recovery or in discovery. And to me, discovery means that you're somewhere like me, where you're discovering what your illnesses are, you're discovering, you know, what the symptoms mean to you, how to work with it, how to manage it. You're in discovery about your mental health issue and how your mental health issue affects you, and the ways that you, and you're learning about the ways that you could employ to cope, and then you're trying to pick out the coping mechanisms that work best for you. If you're in recovery or you are recovered, it's when you are now taking all those skills that you learned about and all that information you learned about in discovery, and you are now working towards recovering, taking all those things that you learned, and now you're employing them, and you're going through your recovery, or you are recovered. Don't feel ashamed if you go from being recovered and you relapse into discovery because something happened and you found out that there's another side to your mental health issue, or if you're in recovery and then you relapse into discovery because you realize, like, oh, that coping mechanism only works for me short term. It's always fluctuating, you know, mental health issues are complex and different things set them off, different things make them dormant, whatnot. But you're all my recoverers and my discoverers. So my general running question for this podcast, no matter what the episode is, I always want to hear about where you are in your mental health journey, whether you're in discovery or in recovery or recovered, and tell me what that means to you and how that looks and how you feel about it, and just tell me about your journey. And that's it. So after I end this, you may or may not hear a little add-on to the end of it, depending on whether I can find it. And as always, I'll be here for you guys until the next podcast.